left off in the previous year, we were discussing some of the halachas regarding the beged of tzitzis. What kind of a beged is obligated in tzitzis? So the Torah tells us, of course, it has to be a four-cornered beged. We spoke about what material the beged has to be made of. Now we move on in terms of the size of the beged. How large a beged is actually chayv in tzitzis? A very touchy topic in terms of some of the youth, some of the older people, older youth also. What exactly is the minimum size of a beged? So the Gemara tells us that the shear of a beged to be chayv in tzitzis has to be big enough that it can cover the reish of rubo shel katan. It has to be large enough that it can cover most of the body of a child. How old the child? So most of the Rishonim learned that the child the Chazal referring to is a 9-year-old. So you got to take your 9-year-olds and try to figure out exactly how much that is necessary. So of course there are different opinions. In the Gedolei Poskim, the Mishnah Berurah writes that he thinks that Meikar Adin, the beged, should be an amma by an amma. So if it's an amma by an amma, then he thinks it's big enough to be the size to cover a Rosh and Rosh Katan. And he says that even if it's a little bit less than an amma by amma, it's probably good enough also. The only problem is that we don't know what shear of an amma the Mishnah Berurah was referring to. We know that the Poskim have a major dispute, the technical machlokes, about just how big practical amma is. The shiurim range anywhere from 18 inches to 24 inches, so we don't know what the Chofetz Chaim had in mind when he spoke about the shiur of an amma. And again, it's not really a function of an amma. This is not hilchas sukkah, it's not a chazerivin, it's not a shiur of an amma. The amma was just a measurement that the Acharonim used to try to approximate how large the child is. That's why there are different opinions about this. So, for many years, we're always told that's 18 inches. 18 inches, that's the shear. Halacha Moshe is 18 inches. That's what some poskim were using. Other poskim said a little bit bigger, other poskim said a little bit smaller. I tell people that, a little bit bigger tzitzis. Those who are smaller, so maybe Me'ikim, Me'ikim, probably the smaller shear is 14 inches, according to some. Even that's considered to be big enough. Remember, years ago, we learned to have tzitzis back in Moshe Kolel. So Rabbi really thought that the Me'ikim, is really 14 inches. So somebody pushed him and said, Rabbi, should we wear 14 inch tzitzis? 14 inch tzitzis? What are you kidding? Should we make tzitzis? So how big? He said, I don't know, bigger. So, but how big is the shear? 14 inches. What should we wear? Bigger. So it's hard for me to give you a clear-cut answer based on that. There is a discussion that the Acharonim have about even when you have a beged of tzitzis, when we speak about the shear, whatever the shear is, 14, 18, 20, whatever the shear is, does the shear get affected by if the hole is cut down? We call the V-neck tzitzis. That was a further shayla. So some poskim said that that doesn't impact on the shear, and some said maybe it does. Maybe the shear only begins to be counted down from where the, when you have a hole tzitzis, maybe it only starts at the bottom of the hole. It's also a further shayla. Again, it's hard to give an absolute answer to that question as well. So the court, well, a little better, a little bigger, the bigger the better in terms of the tzitzis. There is a very lumdish shayla that based on a comment in the Maharil about the size of the beged of tzitzis. We know that when a person wears an arba kanfos, a talis katan, so there's obviously a hole. If you don't have a hole, it's hard to get your head inside. And the question becomes, is there any size in terms of that hole? Is there any measurement in terms of that hole? So the Maharil has a very cryptic comment. He writes that when you make a pair of talis kanfos, so you have the hole in the middle for your head, and then you have the two shoulders on the side. So the Maharil quotes a Gemara in the first Berach of Erevin, that you have to make sure that the hole isn't too big. Because if the hole is too big, Asi Avira the Hagisa, Vavira the Hagisa Mavatale. What in the world does that mean? So the Gemara says in Erevin that when you're building an Erev, there's a halach l'moshe b'sinai that in order to constitute a mechitza, it has to be omen ruba laparetz. It has to be more standing than breaks. That's what the Mishnah says in the first part of Erevin. The Gemara calls that a halach l'moshe b'sinai. So let's say I want to make a wall of an Erev from one end to the other. So I can have a little break here and there, but I have to tally up that in the end I have more standing than hole. The Gemara says, what if you have a significant amount of standing, and then you have a big break, and you have one pole standing in the middle of nowhere, and then you have more breaks. So if you would add up, do all the math, so it would turn out that pole, if you add it to everything else, it'll tip the scales, it'll make your omen move all apart. The Gemara says, in everything you can't do that. Why? Because that pole that's standing in the middle of nowhere, it's being cancelled, it's being negated by the two air spaces that are next to it. That when you have a small pole, you have a small standing area of mechitza, and a lot of air, also avira da haigisa, the avir, the air of one side, the avira da haigisa, and the air the other side, and it cancels, it negates, it's as if that one little pole doesn't exist. When you build an air, you have to keep that halacha in mind. So the Maharil writes that when you make yourself a pair of tzitzis, if the hole is going to be too big, so asi avira the hagisa mevatle. What does that mean? I should have brought a demonstration. So the hole where your head is, if it's bigger than one of the shoulder straps, so now you have air of the hole, and you have air of the rest of the world. So the air of the rest of the world, and the air of the in the headpiece is going to come together and going to cancel that little piece of fabric that's serving as a shoulder. And what's the significance if that happens? So if the halach of asi avira kicks in, then that piece of fabric doesn't exist. It's kaman d'leisa. If that piece of fabric is kaman d'leisa, then you don't have any tziruf. There's nothing connecting the different parts of the beged. So that piece of fabric is going to be gone. And the other piece of fabric on the other side is also going to be gone. So you have two half begadim in front of you. This half is not big enough, and the back half is not big enough. So the Maharil says, in one fell swoop, the only way to overcome that is you have to make sure that the shoulder straps are really, really big. So what exactly does that mean? So the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan both quote from the Machzah Shekhar, one of the early Echaronim, who said that the Maharil didn't really mean what he said. He said, what in the world does this have to do with Eruv? No one's building an Eruv. We're trying to make a prayer at Tzitzis. So the Maharil just used it as a code phrase. He used it just as a melitza, as a mashal. He said, just as in Uchas Eruvin, you have to make sure there are very specific dinim that govern the size of the pieces of the wall, comparing them to the holes and the airspace on the side. So to in Uchas Tzitzis, you have to be careful that the sides, the straps, the shoulder straps are fairly large. If the shoulder straps are going to be so tiny, so we're just going to say, come on, the lace, and they don't exist. What's the shear? How big do the shoulder straps and the tzitzis have to be? Says Mishnah Brura, there's no shear. This has nothing to do with the chaserovin. It's nothing to do with the chaserov. As long as there's some mamushes to it, if it looks like just a little string, that's commander lace, it doesn't exist. So just to express that idea that the shoulder straps and the tzitzis have to be significant, so my real borrowed a phrase as a melitza from the chaserovin, but he didn't really mean it seriously. So comes the Chazanish and says, what do you mean he didn't mean it seriously? If he said it, it wasn't a joke. He meant it seriously. He meant that's the din. That there is a halach of Asev Yudagisa. Asev Yudagisa is only a din in Hilchas Eirvin. Says the Chazanish, that's not true. If you look at the Sugyan Eirvin, the Gemara makes a jump from the Sugyan Eirvin to a Sugyan about Tumu Vitara. The Gemara compares that din of Asev Yudagisa to other areas of halach as well. So the Maharil said, we just extrapolate from that Sugyan to the Sugyas of Tzitz as well. So therefore the Chazanish said, the Maharil meant it very, very seriously and literally. And therefore, if you have a pair of tzitzis, that the hole is bigger than either one of the two sides of the shoulder straps, so that air is mevatel the strap. The strap is kamandalesa, and the no tzitzis is kamandalesa, and you have two half-baked begadim on you. Neither of them has the shear of tzitzis. So the Chazanish said, when you buy a pair of tzitzis, you have to make sure that the strap is not bigger than the hole itself. So there are some pairs of tzitzis that have sold with that hider. Following this Chazanish, against the Mishnah Brura, against the Chashuch, against the Machzah Shekhar, against the Gedaliah Acharonim, who said that the whole thing wasn't literal. But the Chazanish was marked for this. There are some, you can go in the store and ask for that hider of the Chazanish. You should just be aware of the fact that just because you ask for that hider, and just because they tell you that hider, doesn't correspond to the reality where that hider exists or not. I've gone to purchase begadim of tzitzis, and I've asked for that, and I now bring my measuring stick when I buy for tzitzis. If you don't measure that yourself, you're a lot of not going to be getting what you think you're bargaining for. If you're not interested in the chumrah, Mishnah Brura, Chashuch, you don't believe in the chumrah. Okay, so all that. For those who want to follow that Chazanish's suggestion, so it's probably good to measure it out yourself. Remember when my wife used to work in the bar park when we first got married. So when I was driving just yesterday, last night, I was driving on the Holland River Drive. Traffic. I was driving with Mary Yaakov. And I said to him, you know, Mary Yaakov, Ima used to drive on this highway 3 days a week, year in and year out from Washington Heights. I said, before you were born, when we first got married, I said, every time I drive through that traffic, I always think, how did she do this for so many years? So the answer is she took the train one time, and after that one time, she said she'd rather sit in the traffic. Anyway, so when we used to work in Bar Park, so once I sent out a buyer a pair of tzitzis. So I gave a whole list of things you should be careful about. So one was about the size of the hole, about the yad, it's a situation, a whole thing. What's the complications? That's all. So never push. It was a poor little girl from California walking around Bar Park trying to explain. So she went to one store, another store. This one didn't have, that one didn't have. They didn't have exactly what I wanted. So one of the store owners apparently wasn't as respectful as it should have been. So he said to something like, "Who in the world does your husband think he is that he needs this specification? That's what she gave him. So she said to him, she came back, she said, I am never ever going to buy tzitzis ever again. Anyway, getting back to the story. So again, so we have the basic halachas that are governing the size of the beged, the halachas, or the different sheets that are governing in terms of the whole of the beged, whether that qualifies as an acceptable beged or not. And we now move into the halachas that relate, not so much in terms of the chepts of the beged, but in terms of the ownership of the beged. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Menachos and Maseches Chulin, commenting on the pasuk al arba kanfos ksus chashet achaseba, that the only time one is chayiv in the mitzvah of tzitzis is if one owns the beged. If I borrow a beged from somebody, so I'm potter from tzitzis, but the Gemara says that midirabbanon, after 30 days, then it already looks like it's mine, so midirabbanon, you have to put tzitzis on it also. But midiraisa, you potter liolvon, and even midirabbanon, you potter until 30 days. It's because of this halacha that a borrowed beged is potter from tzitzis that we run into a lot of different scenarios. The guy forgot his talis, he wants to borrow someone's talis, he wants to take the shul talis, he's down for the yomer. All these halachas now begin to come into place based on this halacha that a talis she'ul, at least for the first 30 days, is potter from tzitzis. So the Rishon already discussed the shaila of a shul's talis. If you have a talis that was bought by the tzibur, was donated to the tzibur, what's the status of such a talis? Can a person recite a brach, or the person actually chayav, if he puts on such a talis to wear? Let's say it's in a best case scenario, he's putting on for davening. He's got his talis at home, he comes in, he's going to wear the talis for 2 hours in Shabbos. Is that talis chayiv in tzitzis or not? Or is it, should we say that it's a talis she'ul, it doesn't really belong to you? So the Rishonim give two different reasons why we assume that one can recite a brach on such a talis. We assume that a person really does own the talis. So how does he own the talis? One way that he owns the talis is what's called a talis she'ula. Talis she'ula means it's owned by a partnership. So the Gemara says beferish and Maseches Chulin that if you have a beged that's owned by more than one person, that is considered to be chayiv in tzitzis. That sometimes the halacha declares that something has to belong solely to me, and sometimes the halacha says it's owned by shufin. That's also acceptable. This is one of those examples where even though it's owned by a group of people, that's also considered to be chayiv in the midst of tzitzis. So that's one reason that the shul's talis, as we assume, belong to everybody. When we say they belong to everybody, what does that mean? They belong to the members of the shul. What about if a guy comes a guest? A guy walks in from Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't daven in the shul generally, and he needs a talis. It's hard to say that he's a shutuf in everything in the shul. So here the Rishonim give another reason. That maybe that when the talis was bought by the shul, or when it was donated to the shul, so the shul membership had in mind the following, that every person who is going to be zocha on the talis, if and when they need that talis. So you have a rotating ownership of this talis. So when I need the talis, it's going to belong totally to me. When you need the talis, it's going to belong totally to you. Kahena to kahena. So do we have such a concept? You have such a strange kind of rotating kind of an ownership. So the Rishonim point out that you do have that concerning dalad minim. When it comes to dalad minim, so kachtam lachem, each person has to own their own lulav and esrog. And the shutfus doesn't work. The other Gemara says if two people chip in to buy a lulav and esrog, that's no good. So you have to own the lulav and esrog yourself. What if you have a lulav and esrog of a shul? So the Rashbam writes in Bava Basra, that's okay. That was practiced in the Middle Ages. People didn't have their own esrog. Who in the world had their own lulav and esrog in those days? So even not that long ago, even I remember when I was a kid, not everybody had a lulav and esrog. The kids for sure didn't have a lulav and esrog. As I always say, sukkah time, that the lulavim and esrogim that we wouldn't even think of buying for our kids, I said the Gra would have plots to have such an esrog on Sukkot. We have a different standard of what's kosher, what's not. So the Rashbam writes that in Europe, so the Koshi, the Italian got one lulav and esrog, that was great. So how did they fulfill the mitzvah? So Reuven picks it up, and then Shimon picks it up, and Levi, they take turns shaking lulav and esrog. Hi, yes, the Rashbam, it has to belong to the person of Kachtam Lachem. So says the Rashbam, well, when they bought it on behalf of the whole town, that's how they bought it. They didn't buy it b'torah shutfin. They bought it b'torah that it's an under, it's like a matar v'nas lahachzir, that I'll own it, and then on the condition that I'll hand it up to somebody else. So at the time that I take it, I'm the sole owner of that object. So that's what the Rishonim write when it comes to tzitzis also, when the shul purchases or is donated a talis, so it's understood that whoever picks up the talis, at that time he's going to be the sole owner of that talis. So this svar would work, whether a person is a member, not a member, it doesn't matter. Anyone who walks to any shul, we can assume, is considered to be the owner of that talis vis-a-vis the time that he plans on using the talis. So understood, everything is al-das. When he picks it up, it's al-das that he's being credited. That's what he wants to do. So,
I understand, we're not being credited back.
So when he puts it back, so he's being machned it back to the next guy, and the next guy picks it up. That's what we assume usually is taking place. So notwithstanding this idea, then it would be mutter to recite a bracha on a shul talis under all circumstances. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Mata Ephraim a possible suggestion that maybe if a person is only putting on a talis just for a short amount of time, he's putting on a talis just to get an aliyah, to hagba, whatever he's putting a talis for, so maybe he wouldn't make a bracha on such a talis. Why is that? So the Mata Ephraim says, because maybe that's not called a lavisha. Maybe that's called just the kavod bialma. We already spoke about this, that according to some Rishonim, a lavisha is a beged, is only if the beged is actually serving a purpose. It's keeping me warm, it's absorbing sweat, it's doing some real physical thing to help me out. So we said that in Uchas Tzitzis, we don't really pass it away. Haraya, we wear tzitzis, even though they're not necessarily keeping us warm. And we make brachas, but some achrenim write, the medevar memurim, when your mom is putting it on, you're wearing it for a while. You're putting it on just 2 seconds, but on and off, just to get an aliyah. Maybe you can argue such a beged wouldn't warrant a bracha in the first place. So if that's the case, then we have a big question about what talis a person should use if they want to get an aliyah. So on the one hand, if it's a talis shel tzibur, which technically belongs to them, so one can argue that if you don't accept that svar of the Mat Ephraim, like many Achorim don't accept it, so then every time you get an aliyah, you're down for the yom, and you should have to make a bracha on the talis. On the other hand, according to the Mat Ephraim, you're just putting on for a couple of minutes, you shouldn't make a bracha. So now you find yourself in a little bit of a pickle, you're a little bit of a suffering brachas. So it's for that reason that some suggest that maybe the more correct thing to do is to borrow somebody else's talis. If you ask a friend to borrow a talis, then for sure you're potter, and then for sure you wouldn't have to recite a bracha. What if the only talis around is the shul talis? So according to many, if you have in mind not to be zeichel the talis, especially if you don't go the root of the mamon ha-shufrin part, if you go the other idea, that it doesn't really belong to me, it belongs to me because I'm picking it up to be zeichel on it, so if you have in mind nafka not to be zeichel on it, then maybe you wouldn't be chayiv to make a bracha. That's why I tell people, l'chadchiyu, if you're about to get an aliyah, if you can grip your friend's talis, that's better, and if the only talis is around the shul talis, you don't make a bracha, you have in mind not to be zeichel, and you wear the shul talis.
Is that where some men
are
there, where they put a talis on for an aliyah, they keep it on the rest of the
talis? Yeah, that's probably where the men are. But the yek is, they do it by Shabbos Mincha. So the yek is, if a guy gets an aliyah or lanes something, Shabbos Mincha, so he'll keep it on for the whole davening. So that's probably a throwback to this Mat Ephraim. You keep it on for longer, so that's more of a reason to make a bracha. What if a person is mamish borrowing a friend's talis, so then there's really no reason to make a bracha at all. So here the Rush writes that Pemetivar Mamurim, that the Gemara says that you potter on a talis she'ula, that's if I'm borrowing a talis without tzitzis from my friend. So it's understood that I'm not mechuyav to put tzitzis on. But let's say I come to my friend and I say, oh, I forgot my talis, can I please borrow your talis for davening for the next 2 hours? So comes the Rush and says, that's not called borrowing. It's understood. I may use the word quote-unquote borrow, but I really mean is, I want to be able to be a Yitzhak Mitzvah. So I'm asking to be kona your talis. It's like a matzah of the it's like an esrog. The Gemara says that if I don't have a lulav and esrog of my own, so I come to you and I say, can I please use your lulav and esrog? So it's understood that you're giving to me b'toras matana on the condition I'm going to return it. So the same is true when it comes to the talis. So when do we say that a talis she'ula is potter? That's the situation where it's clear that the intent is only to borrow the talis. But if the intent is to be zoicha the talis, because I want to be yaitzin a mitzvah, so that's understood, of course I could recite a bracha on such a talis. Tosfos has a comment in Maseches Chulin, where Tosfos writes that they think that even though a talis she'ula is potter from tzitzis, maybe if a person wants to recite a bracha on it, so hamavarch lo hifsit, Tosfos writes, they don't really lose anything by reciting a bracha. Why is that? So Tosfos gives a very strange mashal. Tosfos says, just as women recite a bracha, Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvayis V'Tzivanu Leshe Besukko Alatilas Lulav, they volunteer to make brachas on mitzvahs that they're exempt from, and we assume that that's okay. Ashkenazim accept that practice, a bit of Tam's practice. So you see from there that you can make a bracha on a mitzvah, even though you're not really mechuyav in the mitzvah. As long as it's called a ma'aseh mitzvah, it's basically a mitzvah, even though I'm not technically chayav, I can also make a bracha. So Tosfos writes that if you can make a bracha, if a woman can make a bracha on sitting in the sukkah, so I can make a bracha on wearing a borrowed talis, because it's, even though it's not really a mitzvah, but it's still something. So the dimyan, the comparison with Tosfos is very, very difficult. When it comes to a woman making a bracha on a mitzvah, even though she's not mechuyevis in the mitzvah, we assume that she gets a kiyama mitzvah. She gets something, it's considered to be a mitzvah, albeit not a mechuyevis bedover. When I wear a borrowed talis, I put tzitzis on a borrowed talis, That's like wearing a non-four-cornered begin. That's nothing. That's one of the conditions in order for the mitzvah of tzitzis to kick in, is that I have to be the owner of the talis. So to say that's the same as women, it's a very, very big difference. So Tosfos somehow wasn't sure. Tosfos somehow thought maybe the comparison is correct. We usually assume that one is not supposed to make a bracha on a borrowed talis unless it meets the criteria that it actually belongs to you. So either it belongs to you if it's a shul talis, or it belongs to you if it's a borrowed from a friend with the express intent of actually wearing it. Mitzvah, and we assume that it's not really borrowed, it really means that it's matana on the condition you're going to return it. Right, so that's probably based on the Shire Ephraim. Yes, that's based on the Mat Ephraim. Those who don't make a bracha, some people do, some don't. Those who don't are based on that Mat Ephraim, as the Mishnah Berurah writes that. You're just wearing it to cover the Alma. So even though you're really technically the owner of it, but it's not really being worn b'toras Levisha. So now we move on in terms of discussing aspects of tzitzis concerning the baguette, but here we start to cross the bridge in terms of the relation between the baguette and the strings. So before we get talk about the strings themselves, which of course the main cheftos mitzvah of tzitzis, so there are certain halachas that govern the relationship between the two, between the baguette and the strings, in the following sense, that sometimes, depending on what the baguette looks like, that's going to impact about what the strings are going to look like as well. So the Gemara raises the question in Maseches Menachos about what the strings of the tzitzis have to be made of, what material is necessary to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. So the Gemara says that part of that answer is depending on what the beged is all about. So it comes to Gemara and says as follows. We learn from the Pasuk, HaKanaf, min kanaf, kanaf sil techemes. Hakanaf means that when you make the strings, you have to look at what the corner of the beged is. I mean, what material is the beged made from? There has to be a certain relationship between the material of the beged and the material of the strings. What does that mean practically? The Gemara says, let's say you have a cotton beged. So if you have a cotton beged, so you should have to have cotton strings. If you make silk strings on a cotton beged, you're not yotze min haTorah. So even according to those who say that cotton is chayim in a Torah, you have to have dafka cotton strings. Well, let's say you have a silk beged, then you have to have silk strings. And if you have cotton strings on a silk beged, that's no good. So there's a din, a kanaf in kanaf. There has to be a relationship between the strings and the beged. It has to be the same material. And then the Gemara quotes another pasuk and says, "I," but the Torah says, "Lo silba shatnez tzemu pishtim yachtov gedilim ta'asalacha." It compares the mitzvah of shatnez to the mitzvah of tzitzis. So the Gemara says, so that's a separate din. That's a din that says that if the strings are made of tzemer or pishtim, that pathas everything. Then you get a green light, everything, no matter what the material of the beged is. So tzemer or pishtim, the Gemara says, a potun bein b'minam bein shelo b'minam. That no matter whether, if it's a wool beged, so then wool will pathas the wool. If it's a linen beged, linen will pathas linen. Whatever tzemer or pishtim is, tzemer or pishtim pathas everything. So tzemer or pishtim will pathas the wool. Animal pathas cotton. Animal pathas silk. Whatever your material is, tzemer or pishtim is an absolute kosher tzitzis. But if you're not making, if you're not using tzemer or pishtim strings, then you have to look beged by beged. So that's what we do, bizman hazeh. We only make tzemer strings. Nobody makes pishtim strings anymore. We only make, all our strings are made out of wool, and we use those wool strings in anything. We invoke this gzeres hakosav of tzemer or pishtim yachtov, whether it's a cotton beged, whether it's a wool beged, whether it's a silk beged, or a polyester beged. Whatever your beged is, whatever beged you think is chayiv and tzitzis, you make wool strings, and that's the way we do polishum suffix. This discussion about what material the strings are going to be made of, that's only referring to the white parts of the strings. If it's the blue part, if it's the tchelas string, so tchelas by definition must be wool. Tchelas doesn't only refer to the color, tchelas refers to the material as well. So tchelas is, without a question, must be wool. Whether the other strings are wool, the other strings are something else, that's going to depend on the type of beggar you have. But lemaisa, what we do today is nobody makes cotton strings anymore, nobody makes silk strings anymore. All of our strings are all wool, and the wool tzemer is poter, bein b'mina, bein shelo b'mina. This gzeres hakosav of hakanaf min kanaf, that has to be a relationship between the beged and the strings. There was a machlekes that we showed him about how far this gzeres hakosav goes. So there was some rishonim who say, based on the Gemara Maseches Menachos, that this comparison applies not only to the type of material, but it applies actually to the color of the beged as well. Let's say, for example, if you have a green beged, then you can't put yellow strings on a green beged. You have to put green strings on a green beged. You have a purple beged, you have to put purple strings. You can't put white strings. Whatever the color of the beged is, that's going to govern the color of the strings also. That's what some Rishonim say. Other Rishonim say, What? Color? What's the color do with anything? The material, that I understand. Those are dinim, tzemer, pishtim, other things. That's a significance in halacha. They quote a line in the Gemara, midei tzivah kagarim. Does the color really make a difference? So that's a question, what that line means exactly. So half the Rishonim say, yeah, color makes a big difference. And there's a din min haTorah that just as the strings have to be patterned after the beged vis-a-vis material, they have to be patterned after the beged vis-a-vis color as well. And other Rishonim say, lahoyud varbiyam. There's no such thing. So that's the machlokes in Shulchan Aruch, what the din is. So therefore the Mishnah Berurah writes that even on the ikum ikum din we pass in, that color really doesn't play a difference. If a guy has a purple talus, he can still make wool, white strings. The Mishnah Berurah writes that, what do you have to get involved in? It's a shayla, it's a chamad neshayla. We just make a normal beged, a normal white beged. The strings are going to be white, so make the beged white also. So the Mishnah Berurah recommends that one not get involved in the shaz, the shavadei raisa. So even though mikra din, there are more paskins that the color doesn't really make a difference. But why get involved in the shav? You don't have to. The Mishnah Berurah strongly recommends that one should have a regular white beged together with white strings. That's the correct way to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. Then the Mishnah Berurah says, we all have black stripes and a talus. So Mishnah Berurah says, that doesn't change the color of the talus. The talus is basically white. A little design, a little white, a little black here and there. That's not significant. But if the whole talus would be black, then maybe you'd have to put black strings in it. It's the coin to some Rishonim. So that's what our practice is. That we try to keep our talikanfos to be white, and we try to keep our taluses to be. I mean, sometimes they get yellowish as the days go on, but some, as yellow as they get, the strings get yellow also. So whatever it is, so we assume that that's also considered to be within the expanded white family. As the Poskim writes, it's not really right that some people wear these very, very funny kinds of these multicolored rainbow taluses with not just in the stripes. The whole talus is pink, purple, green, all these things. That's not really right. One should stick to a regular white talus with a black stripe, blue stripe, whatever different stripes, colors there are. The Sephardi, the white, unwhite, whatever your talus is, but the primary part of the talus is more correct to be white. Those who have the strange colored taluses, I can't say it's wrong. There are more paskins that it's okay to have a purple talus. I don't think you have purple talus in Krakow. You can have a purple talus with white strings. The Rambam says that it's okay, but the Mishnah Berurah recommends that it's probably not the correct way to go. The Mishnah Berurah writes that the black stripe is a throwback to Tchelis. It's supposed to be reminded of Tchelis. So why is it black? So there was a machlokes and Rishonim exactly how dark a blue is a Tchelis supposed to be. So the Rashi and Chumash writes that Tchelis is a very, very dark shade of blue. Rashi writes it's almost like the sky at night. So he says it's closer to the black family. And the Rambam writes that it's cloak. The Gemara says it's like the color of the sky. Rashi says it's the color of the sky at night, and the Rambam writes it's the color of the sky at noon, in the middle of the day, which is much closer to what our Tchelis, those who wear Tchelis today, is closer to the Shittas Rambam. So probably following the Shittas Rashi, that's a very, very dark kind of almost like a midnight blue, so it's probably hard to manufacture that color, so they became black. Okay, I guess. Make a zeche. We need a zeche for you. Somebody was telling me that a certain yeshiva they wanted to make sure all the boys were wearing black shoes. So this particular boy was wearing a very, very dark navy shoes. So they told him in the yeshiva they should really switch. They should really wear black shoes rather than dark blue shoes. So he came to ask me what I thought about that. So I said it's against the Be'alocha. He said the Be'alocha in Uchas Tefillin writes that there's Alocha Moshe Messina that Tefillin straps have to be black, but the Be'alocha writes that if you look in the poskim with a very, very dark blue, they're also okay. That the dark blue, halachically, and black are really considered to be the same color. So the Mishnah Berurah says that when it comes to the letters of a Sefer Torah, there's a special halacha Moshe Messina, it has to be dio. So the Rambam writes it has to be black like dio. It has to be almost like black ink. That's the halacha Moshe Messina. So when the halacha Moshe Messina says it has to be black like something else, so that's mamish black. Blue is not good enough. But when the halacha Moshe Sinai just says it has to be black, so shcheiros, so shachar, and halacha means even dark blue. So I said in a half joke, I said, you tell people in the yeshiva that, okay, according to the Be'alocha and the Chastfilin, so your dark blue shoes are good enough. So the response that I got back was, he says that when the bacher will wear blue tefillin to shoes to school, then we'll let him wear the blue shoes to school. So, okay. It was all in good take. The person who sent the message got a good laugh out of it. Okay. Anyway, getting back to this story. So there is definitely a comparison between the beged and the strings, whether the comparison is only vis-a-vis material or whether it covers also in terms of colors, that's a question. When we speak about the strings of the tzitzis, how many strings are necessary? So the Gemara quotes actually Machlekes about this, and we pass in Halacha, based on the word gedilim. So gedil means like a cord. Gedil means things that are wrapped together. So you can only wrap, in order to wrap something together, it's got to be a minimum of two. You can't wrap itself on itself. So you have to have a minimum of two to be called a gedil. And then the Torah says gedilim b'loshin rabim. So that's going to be two gedilim. So each gedil is two, and the total together is four. So that's what the din is. That's what we pass in the Torah. You require four strings per corner. And then, of course, you go through the hole, you fold the strings over. So Mimela, you end up with eight strings. We call eight strings, but really, it's only four strings. What's the breakdown of those strings in terms of white versus tcheles? So that's a big machlekes in Rishonim, beginning of the fourth parak of Masechet Menachos. How many strings of tcheles are you supposed to have? So there are three different opinions what the breakdown's supposed to be. There were some Rishonim, it was hard for Rishonim couldn't look at tcheles, but Rishonim didn't have tcheles by the time of Rashi and Tosfos. So nobody knew exactly what tcheles is supposed to look like. So we're trying to reconstruct from the Lashonis and the Gemara just how many strings of tcheles are supposed to be. So some Rishonim said it's supposed to be two and two. So if you have two and two, then the breakdown is going to be when the tcheles comes out, when you finish your tzitzis, it's going to be mamsh half tcheles and half lovan. And other Rishonim said no, that the breakdown is supposed to be three and one. The other deed from the Gemara is supposed to be three and one. So then the breakdown is going to come out to be two versus six. And there are others who say no, it's only supposed to be a half a string of tcheles. That when it comes through the hole, so you end up with one versus seven. So you have ratio of four to four, ratio of two to six, and ratio of one to seven. What's the minute? Those were tcheles? No. I forgot which is tcheles. So it's four and four. That's what it is.
Most people do it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So what's yours?
I do.
So what, you have four and four? Expensive, okay. I said when tcheles first started, so somebody asked me if I wasn't wearing tcheles, they said to me, they said, such and such Talmud of Rabbi Shechter is wearing tcheles. I thought you were Talmud of Rabbi Shechter. I thought you followed all his menhagim. I didn't tell him that answer. So I said to him, did Rabbi Shechter, how did Rabbi Shechter get the tcheles? So he said, somebody gave it to him as a gift. So I said, I'm waiting when somebody gives it to me for a gift. Still waiting. So different opinions about it. So most people wear 1.7 or 2.6. You know, to break that is, I don't know.
There's a lot.
I have to take a look. Every possible permutation. Okay. Anyway, so whatever the breakdown is, different opinions. But in terms of the total of four strings, which become eight strings, so that everyone accepts. There's not as that it was one. Some Tanoim didn't accept that, but that's the way we pass it along. It's interesting. Gemara says in Baba Basra about this machloikis HaTanoim, about whether there was one Tana that said that you don't need four strings, three strings, two, so whatever different opinions the Gemara quotes are. So Gemara tells a very strange story. The Gemara says that one of the Amoraim was walking in the Midbar and he saw some of the Meisei Midbar. He saw some of the bodies left from the Meisei Midbar. So when he came to the Beis Medrash, he was telling it. So the other Amoraim said to him, did you count? Apparently the bodies were still intact. So he said, did you look at their tzitzis? Did you see how many strings they had? That would be a good ray for us to paskin, to figure out how we're going to paskin the halacha. That was the Gemara's response. So some bring a ray from that Gemara. You see that you can paskin shalos based on archaeology. You look up and find a body from 2,000 years ago, so you can decide a halacha based on that. So others were very weary about, that was an Amira who was figuring out, sometimes we draw conclusions from things incorrectly. So there was a pilpul that someone wanted to bring a raya from some of the Sefer Torah. His Machlekes Rashi made a tam about how a yud is supposed to be shaped. So someone wanted to bring a raya that they, found some of the old Sefer Torah that were closer to Rashi than what the Rabbeinu Tam in terms of the small corner, small little kutzah shel yud. So someone to bring right. You see from here that Rashi is right. So others said, no, where'd you find the Sefer Torah? You found it in Geniza. That's why they put it into Sheamus, because the Sefer Torah was possible. Again, it's hard to believe that somebody brought the Sefer Torah and put the whole thing into Sheamus, because they didn't meet Rabbeinu Tam's standards. But whatever it is. So you have to always be a little bit weary when you bring riots from things in the past. You have to make sure that you have all the facts right. Anyway, getting back to this story. So Lamaisa, Tzitzis have to have four strings on it. What if they have more than four strings? Is there anything wrong with that? So Tosfos quotes a Shaila, maybe that'll be an issue about Tosef. Just as on Tefillin, if you add on a fifth bias to the Tefillin, that's called Bal Tosef. If you add on a fifth min to the Lulav, maybe that's considered to be Bal Tosef. If you add on more strings, maybe that'll be a Shaila Bal Tosef also. So other Rishonim say that that's not called Bataisif. Quote from the Bala Itter who says that that's not called Bataisif. Why Bataisif is only violated if you add on something which is very, very different. So let's say in the Tefillin, so you add on a fifth bias, and you put a new parsha, so you put in Matov Olach Yaakov into the Tefillin. That's already a different entity. So that's fundamentally different than the other four. Let's say a lulav. You take a lulav, Esrog, Adas, and a Rav, and add on a rose or a tulip. So that's already a different entity. When you add on a string, what do you add? Another string, and another string, and another string. It's all the same strings. If you take four strings and you tie on something else which wouldn't be a kosher string, maybe that's called Baltoisif. But just to add on to the same mitzvah, Nochamol, that's not considered to be Baltoisif. So Toisif has a similar idea to that, also in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. Toisif writes, when you perform a mitzvah, if you keep on doing the same mitzvah over and over and over again, that's not called Baltoisif. Baltoisif is when you change the Tzuras HaMitzvah. So Toisif says, that's what we do in Rosh Hashanah. The Torah says you're supposed to blow the shofar 9 times, and we blow the shofar 100 times. Why is that Hashem Baltoisif? So Tosef says, that's a joke. That's not called Baltoisif. That's called just Nachamol. You're doing the same thing over and over and over again. So Tosef brings a marshal. Tosef says, when you eat matzah at the Seder, so the Torah says you have to eat a kazayis. So if you eat 2 kazayis, remember Baltoisif? That would be a new chumrah. Imagine if that would be the din. If you eat more than a kazayis, you're Baltoisif. So they would have to send you a card from the yeshiva saying, you have to eat exactly this amount of matzah. If you eat a drop less, so you're not here to the mitzvah, you're to drop more, you're over about Taisus. So Taisus, that's a late sonnus. Why is that a late sonnus? Why is that not true? So Taisus says, when you do the same mitzvah over and over and over again, so that's not considered to be an issue of about Taisus. So Taisus brings a very strange riot to that idea. Taisus writes, when you build the sukkah, so the Torah says that the sukkah only has to have 3 walls. So Taisus says, if you build the 4th wall, why is that called about Taisus? Taisa says, nah, that's not called Baltaisif. So one of the reasons why Taisa says that's a joke of Akasha, Taisa says, that's not called Baltaisif, because you're not adding something different. You're adding on another wall. So it's the same fundamental wall as the first 3 walls. You're just repeating the mitzvah, repeating the dimension of the sukkah. That's not considered to be Baltaisif. Then Taisa says, maybe that's not a good raya. Taisa says, maybe that whole Akasha. What?
But that's bad for them. We assume that the basic four walls is less than that.
Yeah, so that's what Tosis writes. So Tosis writes that he thinks maybe the whole riot from sukkah is not a good riot. Tosis writes that by sukkah, forget if you have a 4-wall sukkah, that's more teshuv king to duru. That's a greater sukkah. The halacha moshe says, oh, by the way, if you can't get that 4th wall, all right, the kosher will let you have a 3-wall sukkah. So Tosis says, dech that riot. So you see, interesting from that Tosis sounds like lechatchil is supposed to have a 4-wall sukkah. It doesn't say that anywhere. The Mishnah says, the first Mishnah sukkah says, a 3-wall sukkah is kosher. Nowhere in the whole Masechta does it say lechatchil should have a 4-wall sukkah. So Tosis in the third paragraph of Sa'a Sofek, that maybe it's a better to have a 4-wall sukkah than a 3-wall sukkah. It's more teshuva kein taduru. So California, we used to have that challenge. California, most people have 3-wall sukkahs because it's so hot, you want to give more air to come in. So unless you want to argue, that's more of a teshuva kein taduru, because if you make a 4-wall sukkah, it's going to be uncomfortable. So you have conflict. If you live in New York, so you should not have a 4-wall sukkah, because Taisha's right, it's a more behidah to have a 4-wall sukkah. Again, it's a chiddush that Taisha. Getting back to that story. So the Rishonim are not sure what is the din about Taisha when it comes to the strings and its tzitzis. So some Rishonim say, yeah, if you add on another string, that's an issue about Taisha. And other Rishonim say, nah, what kind of, it's not about Taisha. About Taisha is only when you add on something else. But if you just add on nocha strings, so that's bechlal nocha zed to be about Taisha. Next week, we'll continue talking more about these nocha zed strings.
We put through 4 hours.